Good evening to everybody. I'm Sister Celine. I'm a religious nun of the Congregation of the Good Shepherd. But I'm here representing IMPIS Mindanao, which is a broad-based, interfaith, multisectoral movement, peace movement, that hopes to facilitate the attainment of just and lasting peace in Mindanao. This is composed of lawyers, academics, churches, the Lumads, and other marginalized sector. So tonight we will try to show you the general situation in Mindanao, and Sign Up here would expound on the Muslim situation.
Yeah. Good evening. I'm Sign Up Ampatuan from Mindanao. And I'm working with the Moro Youth League in the Philippines, and at the same time working with Initiatives for Peace in Mindanao with Sister Celine. And we are here in New York to attend the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues at the United Nations. We are sponsored by the United Methodist Church, and I came from a Muslim group in the Philippines, and Sister Celine came from the RGS Nan. And then our third companion in this delegation is a pastor of a Methodist from Norway. So this is a very ecumenical and interfaith delegation coming from two countries and coming from different faiths. So we're glad the NESPAP organize side events aside from our caucuses in the permanent forum that started last week and then will end tomorrow. So we're glad we are here to give some updates on what is happening in the Philippines, particularly in Mindanao.
Okay. So the PowerPoint presentation is on the general situation of Mindanao. And Mindanao is depicted as a concrete study in contrast. We in Mindanao, with the fast turn of events, is confronted with a big question, as will Mindanao be the next Afghanistan. So we invite you, our friends, to reflect with us in seeking or in finding what is the truth. So we will start now with the PowerPoint presentation. So these are the faces of Mindanao. Will Mindanao be the next Afghanistan? Bush himself has this to say: in the war on terror, U.S.-Philippine military alliance is a rock of stability in the Pacific. Mindanao is such a lawless, certain portions of Mindanao are so lawless, so porous, the borders that you run the risk of it becoming like an Afghanistan situation. This is according to Joseph Musumleni of the U.S. Charged Affairs, April 2005. Mindanao is the second largest island in the Philippines and the 19th biggest island in the world, with 101,998 square kilometers. The population: Mindanao is 18 million with 13 million non-indigenous groups and 3.6 million indigenous peoples with 18 ethno-linguistic tribes or Lumads and 1.4 million Moro with 13 tribes. Yes, Mindanao is really a study in contrast. Mindanao is abundant in resources, agriculture, sea products, minerals, and then the Linguas on Mars, which they say is where the natural gas are abundant, and the Philippine Deep, where the deuterium is. But, on the other hand, people live in extreme poverty, and 1.4 million families go hungry, and 60% live below poverty threshold. The economic conditions: we are agriculturally backward and pre-industrialized. with strong maldevelopment, and at the same time, a land in turmoil. In Peace has recorded 37 mystery bombings since 2001, 118 killed, and 605 injured. So among these, two happened in Davao. We have the bombing in the Davao International Airport and in Sasawar. So far, that is the biggest casualties. Our government, starting from Estrada, declared an all-out war in Mindanao. And since 1970, more than 100,000 persons were killed. 30% go from government casualties, 50% rebels, and 20% civilians. The cost of war, 73 billion in 26 years, which is 40% of the annual budget. One 105mm howitzer costing 7,300, 100 howitzers 730,000, and 1,123 bags of certified rice seeds at 650 pesos per bag. Indeed, it is a land plundered and prostituted. This is where large-scale open-pit mining, and there is 11 sites of priority mining projects. Large-scale open-pit mining are located in different parts in Zamboanga, in Surigao del Norte, Compostela Valley, and some of the NISPA people here were able to visit already the place, I think Compostela Nila over there. So there is continuous extraction in Compostela Valley. And the recent pronouncement of Gloria Arroyo will be the more multinational mining corporations are being given the license to extract resources and mining resources in Mindanao. It's not only the mineral resources, but also our agricultural land. We have a big, vast agricultural land, but now these lands are being converted to crops for export. Like agricultural farm for rice are now converted to cut flowers, and other vegetable or fruits that is needed or that is being demanded in the foreign market. So, and the irony is, we export our own rice. With the vast land we have, the Filipinos, we export our rice from Thailand. Likwasan Mars in the basin of Mindanao River in south-central Mindanao and north Cotabato, these Likwasan Mars, it was during the total war that was that happened during Estrada. They attacked the camp Abu Bakar in Cotabato, where the Likwasan Mars is located. And it is now being visited by foreign investors because a large portion of Likwasan Mars, they found out that there are natural gas. So we can say that there is what we call recolonization of Mindanao. So why Mindanao? We do have interest in stability and growth in the Philippines, and that's all we care. The Philippines is a friend of the United States. That is Richard Doni, the U.S. ambassador to the Philippines. So, projects and other relief rehabilitation programs are being given to the different communities in order to win the hearts and minds of our indigenous or Lumad people. And this is the latest and the most visible is the USRP Balikatan exercise in the guise of training our soldiers to go after the terrorists. So they have come and they are still coming. So, what are the implications of all this? What is the implication on our people, especially the indigenous peoples? Islamophobia. This is the irrational fear of Islam, Muslim, or Islamic culture, and it encompasses the belief that all are or most Muslims are religious fanatics. This is very clear in Davao City right after the international airport bombing. Any Muslim who rides in a public bus or jeepneys, they are sneered at, and they are tagged, really, and they are called murderer. So that is one example of what we mean by Islamophobia. And it has affected, right after the bombing, there were arrests in the different Muslim communities in Davao, and mostly the youths were the ones jailed during those times. So these bombings create really animosity for our moral brothers and sisters. What are these forms of Islamophobia? All outward on moral communities, terrorist labeling, forcible evacuations, illegal arrests and detention, forced disappearances, national ID system and profiling of Muslims, and desecration of religious institutions and cultural heritage. On our Lumad people, they are now victims of this, what we call ethnocide. This is the sum effect of policies and programs that erode cultural integrity and identity of the indigenous populations. And what are these forms of ethnocide? Militarization, the passage of the Mining Act of 1995, which opened the Philippines, especially Mindanao, to transnational corporations dealing with mining. We have logging operations, large dam projects, recruitment into paramilitary groups and cults, food blockages, and forced evacuations. The culture of impunity, with an increasing number of summary killings and in human rights violations, we in IMPIS have documented 85,000 HR violations since 2000. So with all these events happening, how do our people react to this situation? So we have number of people's responses. We have strengthened movement against the U.S. empire. We have built consensus against the U.S.-backed Arroyo government. So we do a lot of advocacy work and solidarity building so that people can join us in this fight against the plunder of Mindanao. Exposing human rights violations and militarism. This is a continuous mass campaign exposing all human rights violations committed by the military and U.S. Armed Forces of the Philippines. So campaign against the scrapping of the Mining Act of 1995 is ongoing. This is not only in Mindanao, this is a national protest for the scrapping of the Philippine Mining Act of 1995. So there is the resisting of imperialist plunder at the level of communities. So there is massive education campaign on the community level to expose the issue and to make our people understand, and together we can make the right analysis for action. there is the fighting Islamophobia through anti-imperialist Muslim-Christian solidarity. So we have tried to promote alternatives to globalization and plunder. With the mining, we are trying to come up with people's mining program as an alternative to the onerous mining Act of 1995. Because of this situation, because of this massive problem, the issues, the big issues we are encountering, and really the imperialist plunder of Mindanao, we are calling for solidarity with the people of Mindanao, like this group. So we ask that you be an advocate for a just peace in Mindanao, to be able to resist Islamophobia and to fight ethnocide and defend the patrimony of the Filipino people and resist imperialist plunder of Mindanao's resources and to support indigenous people's rights to self-determination. So, thank you for listening. And this is all for now. So, if you have questions.
Yeah, what is that as a group, as Suara, S-U-A-R-A?
Yeah, Suara means voice, and this group was created in 2002. We intend to participate in the Congress because Philippines approve this partyless system. And if you would like to create an organization and represent your group in the Congress, you can organize and register to the COMELEC and have, if you win in the election, you can have your representative in the Congress. So we did the organizing, we registered the COMELEC, and then we prepared all the documents needed. We elected officers and do the conventions and all of that, and we just failed after the election because of the massive fraud. Suara means voice, and the very intention of this party list is first to unite the 13 ethnolinguistic group of the Moro people and to connect the struggle of the Moro people to the other sectors. And a very brief history about Philippines, why I am identified Moro, because the first inhabitants of the Philippines are the indigenous people. But in 13th century, when some people from Indonesia and Malaysia and other sharifs came from Middle East countries who spread Islam all over the Philippines, and we belong to the Islamized group. And then when the Spaniards came in the 16th century, there was this group who were Christianized. So that composes the three major groups in the country, the Christianized group, the Islamized group, and then the indigenous people. The Islamized group also identified as Moro. Now the subject of the government and the U.S. government to their campaign on terrorism, especially right after September 11 attack. And this is a good excuse for the government to just illegally arrest, abduct Moro people. Just like Sister Celine sharing, there were 37 cases of bombings that the INPIS Mindanao documented right after September 11 attack. And this is to justify that there is really a terrorism happening all over the world. And because Gloria Macapagal Arroyo, our president, extend her willingness to be the member of the coalition of willing, and so they have to justify that there is really a terrorism, and this is happening in the Philippines. And so it breeds and creates a lot of human rights violations committed especially against the Moro people. And now, because the creation of Initiatives for Peace in Mindanao was inspired by this, we call it organized, massive, and mystery bombings because there was no suspect. Right after the bombing, the armed forces of the Philippines and even the Malacanang just immediately accused the Moro people, the Muslim in general, and they just conduct illegal arrest and abduction within Moro communities. And then until now, there are Moro people who are in jail because they were suspected as bombers. And there was this group of military, they call themselves Magdalu Group, who came out and tried to launch a coup. And they exposed that the high officials, high-ranking officials within the military are the ones who backed this massive bombings. And so there was a confusion among Filipino people in analyzing who's beyond this mystery bombings, because the government will just accuse the Moro Islamic Liberation Front, the revolutionary group of the Moro people. And then some of the junior officials coming from Armed Forces of the Philippines accuse their own officials in the Armed Forces of the Philippines. And so there is this confusion and puzzle between and among Filipino people. And In Peace One was inspired by this, and we created this coalition and even created a truth commission to focus on this issue and conduct investigations on the issue of bombings.
There was an American who accidentally moved the lobby in a hotel in the and then the FBI came and took him away. Has there anything been found out about this guy who was doing the Philippines?
This is Maring, Richard Maring. Well, after the bomb exploded from his hotel, from his room in the hotel, he was whisked away by the FBI. So, she got free. Yes, that angered our mayor Duterte. So. Because she was not in, she did not know that there, that Maring exists. That's it. It was the FBI who got him and brought him back to, maybe back to the U.S. There is no report so far.
Well, actually, he's been cited in Texas. He's been walking around.
Oh. Really? So Dan, so Dan, answer your question. Thank you, Dan.
Yes. So, which mining companies? What are the roles of mining companies?
Yeah. Philippines is known to be very rich in natural resources. And since they have already explored natural resources in Luzon and Visayas, and what is left now is all in Mindanao, minerals, oil, and gold, copper, iron, all of those natural resources that we have in Mindanao. A lot of transnationals and national companies that are now starting exploring and soon to be exploiting the natural resources, aside from the plantations that are in the Philippines already since 1900s. Now the plantations that are operating there are Del Monte, Dole, United Fruit, Firestone, and many other U.S. companies for the plantations. Sister just shared that last 2000. When Strada regime declared an all-out war, most of these MILF camps were targeted to be oil palm, banana expansion for these plantations, and one camp is target for oil exploration that is in Ligawasan Mars. This Mars is reported with 1.3 trillion cubic feet of oil deposit and other minerals. And
Philippine Deep.
Aside from that natural resource in Ligawasan Mars, we have also deuterium somewhere in Philippines, in Surigao, where the Balikatan, the shoulder-to-shoulder exercises are happening. And most of these areas that are militarized are targets for plantations, targets for mining. Mining areas... mining areas. Let me find it first. Here. Growth with equity in Mindanao, or GEM, a priority of the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, has identified mining centers in Mindanao. Since Mindanao is practically a mineral and oil paradise, these are the following areas. Tampakan in South Cotabato, where world-class gold can be reportedly found. Hinutungan, this is in Davao del Sur, rich in gold and copper. Buda, at the boundary of Davao City and Bukidnon, reportedly has diamond potentials. Bunawan in Agusan del Sur and Diwalwal in Compostela Valley, with vast gold reserves, and Manat in Compostela Valley, also rich in gold. What are the mining companies that are now operating there? Western mining companies.
Canada Ventures. What we know is that King Project is it's not only, it is in, there is a Filipino counterpart of that, with the Alzons or the Alcantara in France. No? So it's a vast lagging, that's what a lagging place, site in King Project. And the people, the workers there have gone into several strikes, but they have lost. So it is really now a continuing struggle for the workers in that lagging site until now.
And how many mines have actually gone in? Is it happening?
There is a continuous extraction, actually. And we foresee that massive extraction will happen because many permits or licenses were given by the GMA administration, especially after the International Mining Conference in Manila 2 months ago. And we feel that Gloria has sold the Philippines. It is a complete sellout of the Philippines to foreign companies and investors.
If you don't mind, one last question. There was also in that area, I heard a massacre recently of 4 people. Is it the Mako Corps? Do you know anything about that? Did it ring a bell?
The Mako 4?
Yeah. Mako.
Mako Corps?
This is in Mako.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was an abduction of four youth leaders.
Youth.
They were just abducted. They came from in a certain community, and then this is part of the massive killings of the identified activists in the Philippines, whether you are a church worker, a media practitioner, a student, or once you were identified, very vocal against the programs and policies of the government, you were in the list of this abduction and right away killing. So that what had happened to these four youth.
When was this?
Just last year. But after this, there were a lot of killing incidents. Both media practitioners and activists.
The day we came to U.S., certain pastor, UCCP pastor, his name is Edison Lapus, a member of the PCPR or the Promotion of Church People's Rights, was murdered. That is how many? 67 killings already recorded, different different sectors and classes. So we really Jews or other are not, is not spared.
The economic pressures, the companies that want to exploit the land for their profit, is really the cause of the exploitation and the oppression of the populace in Mindanao. Is that the basis of what you're saying?
Yeah. The number one problem of not only the indigenous people, but majority of the Filipino people, because almost 80% of the total population engage in farming, and yet most of these farmers don't own land, they're just tenants. And because of this global policies, particularly on economy, the problem on land even intensified, because the government open the whole country for mining industries, for expansion of plantations. And the Congress now and the Senate are talking of the possibilities of getting into charter change, to change the constitution, to open or even give the 100% ownership for the foreigners in our land. So that's 100% ownership. There are some big business people who can just buy the whole Philippines.
So this might be the obvious fact, but I'm constantly asked about the group called RPM.
RPM? Yeah. We're not familiar of that group, but what is known to everyone in the Philippines are two groups that are categorized differently, the revolutionary group and these paramilitary groups that are backed by the military itself to justify the terrorism activities in the country. In line with that question, in 1970s, the Moro National Liberation Front, led by Noor Miswari, organized because they wanted to defend the interests of the Moro people and fight to defend the Moro lands. But in 1996, Miswari co-opted with the government and even signed to the peace agreement in 1996, and he is now in jail. And then the implementation of this peace agreement is questionable, and this autonomous region in Muslim Mindanao created for Miswari's governorship after they signed an agreement is now identified as number one corrupt region and the number one highest in terms of poverty rate. And after the dismantle of the Moro National Liberation Front, another Moro organization came out, and that is the Moro Islamic Liberation Front, where the two regimes declared an all-out war against them. And it's not just against them, but against the Moro communities, and it's all over Mindanao, where the government declared an all-out war. And what is new now among the Moro organization is the Abu Sayyaf, that is ASG, Abu Sayyaf Group. And this group was once the abductors of Gracia Burnham, somewhere in Basilan. And this group have justified by several persons, especially those who were abducted also, that they have some collusion, with the Philippine armed forces. They are kidnapping foreigners, and they are dealing with the ransom money they have to share. And bigger portion of this ransom money goes to the military, and even this became a reason for their promotion, some of the high-ranking officials. So we have this Abu Sayyaf, the ASG, and now Armed Forces of the Philippines are creating a... they are conditioning the mind of the Filipino people that there are presence of Jumaa Islamia in Mindanao, and then this is directly linked to the international terrorism activities of Osama bin Laden. And so there are now a lot of organizations that are in Mindanao, and the latest of this is the recruitment of paramilitary group way back in 1970s, the Ilaga Land Grabbers Association. And the purpose of organizing, arming, and recruiting members of this group is to retaliate against the quote-unquote terrorism, and immediately the activities of this group is when they see a Muslim person. And of course, you can. They can just easily identify the way you talk, the way you dress up, and everything. There is this immediate killing, and so we are feared of this because if there is no massive campaign and solidarity against this plan of some politicians and the government itself, the time during martial law time. Is now happening, but it's not declared, but it's an undeclared martial law. And even the records of human rights violations committed against Filipino people now even surpass the records of Marcos during martial law time. So there are a lot of human rights violations committed against different organization and different people in the Philippines.
My question is just what are the U.S. troops doing in Mindanao? What are they doing? What are the Marines? Mm-hmm. Are they special forces?
Yeah, the first report that we got is there are 70 U.S. spies in Mindanao. When the first time we learned about it, there was a Mindanao-wide protest action in the municipality where the shoulder-to-shoulder exercise is happening. And we mobilized at least 6,000 to 7,000 protesters to register our stand on their presence in that municipality. And 1 week after, they move away, and after that massive mobilizations, they are not giving information anymore about exercises, but we're learning from the community people that there are presence of U.S. troops even in the very communities of the Moro Islamic Liberation Front, because they are conducting now mapping, zoning, and all of the basic preparations for the next plans to implement in the area. So aside from the 70 spies that are now there, we don't have new and exact figure of how many U.S. troops are there and where are these troops are operating now. There are groups of Moro people that are calling for independence, campaigning for a UN supervised referendum for independence, and there are Moro groups that are discussing about federalism, and there are also groups that are calling for a right to self-determination, and there are also groups that are calling to separate the Mindanao from the rest of the country. But for the Suara Bangsa Moro Party, for the League of Moro Youth, we see this proposal as impractical because in Mindanao, only not even 20% of the total population belongs to the Moro group, And how will you separate the Mindanao from the rest of the islands in the Philippines? If the Moro people are calling for right to self-determination, this is also true to the rest of the Filipino people, because if the farmers of the Moro people don't own land, this is also true to the farmers of the non-Moro people, the indigenous and the Christianized group. So in terms of basic problems, more Islamized group, the Christianized group, and the indigenous group share the same problem on the issue of landlessness, on the issue of job, on the issue of right to education for the children. And so what we really need to do is a massive education to both of these different groups, and a massive organizing to really understand the problem, because even before, during Spaniard time, according to our great parents, I myself grow up with an orientation not to make friends with the Christians because of my family's experience during martial law time. Their house was burned by the Christian group. And then there are also Christian families and group that have been killed by the Moro people. And so the quote-unquote Christian and Muslim conflict until now is being maximized by the government to create tension and even to divide the people in the Philippines. And when I have a chance to share with my friends, they shared to me the same story, that they also grew up with an orientation coming from their parents not to make friends with the Muslims, because Muslims are like this and like that. So in the school, we're sharing the same food, we're sharing the same room, we're not quarreling, and yet the orientations coming from our parents, even the media, are fighting us. And so we just realized that instead of fighting each other, why not sit together? We will identify what is our problem, and the very basic tool to this is re-education about our history, because we just came from one origin, and that's the indigenous group. And so instead of quarreling, we just sit down and then identify the problem and how can we move on to once and for all develop our communities and then end the fighting. And so I actively participate in this kind of activities and even engage into organizing not only the Moro people, but the indigenous. I'm also engaged in organizing. But once you organize yourselves, you can discuss among yourselves. And the very critical factor in even in development in the community is the community people. If there is an organization and there is enough strength for the community people to say, no, we don't like to entertain mining companies in our communities because this would destroy the land. One thing that is necessary is education, because how can you defend your right if you don't know what is your rights, your basic rights? So we believe that in unity there is strength, and once we are organized and we are educated on our basic rights, we can this is a good start. And that's one of the reasons why we are also having an international work to have some international solidarity to at least even expose these issues. And we're also initiating local initiatives to stop this exploitation over our natural resources and to defend the interest and the land of the Filipino people.
How much political freedom do you have? You have an organization of youth, you know, how many people have you meet, and how do you deal with such a climate of repression you know, that dangers, about what is the danger of you getting listed out?
Yeah, you can be in the list.
We are in the list. We are in the list.
Yeah, we are even in the list of government's target. But what we have realized is if we stop talking about what is happening, and if we stop talking about realities in the Philippines, who will talk? And who will defend our rights and who will defend our land? If our older people didn't stop fighting before, maybe some of the fruits of their struggles are enjoyed by the youth now. But since there is no perfect, and we really have to work on it. So even if there is danger in this kind of work, we're much challenged to engage in this kind of work because we're not expecting other people to do this task and responsibility. It's all of us. All of us that are looking for justice and fighting for rights, we will work together. And to be with the United Methodist Church and to be with sister from the Catholic religious nun is not an easy task, because even entering in churches, some of my Muslim brothers and sisters are condemning me because for some this is taboo for them. But in engaging into this interfaith activities and ecumenism, you will realize a lot of things and a lot of commonalities that reason for us to become stronger and a reason for us to move on.